right. I hope this is going to... Everybody here okay? Thank you, Jimmy and Joan. This is a wonderful reading series. I feel honored to be here. It is very prestigious, even if some people can't spell the word prestigious. I still think it's very nice to be here. I just wanted to start out by saying I have a poem up right now at the Magnolia Review. It's called Sis. But what also is there is a wonderful review of my new book, Namasani's Hand. I promise to title the next book a little easier. So I figured I'd just piss everyone off to begin with. This is called Zero Tolerance. And I'm going to give this to Jimmy at the end. Zero Tolerance. How something sweet is often rotten. The smell of garbage, the sound of a tax cut, the feel of a few extra dollars in a wallet to buy silence or indifference. Children in camps concentrate. A little brown girl flails, grasps air, her heart an empty elevator shaft, her chest an air pocket of grief. Concentrate. Little ones march into a repurposed Walmart. Aisle 5, allergy and pain medicine. Aisle 7, mouthwash, toothpaste, dental care. Aisle 8, home repair and home security. Aisle 10, orphans in underwear. Aisle 11, infants sob in despair. We watch in flatlined, flat-screen calm, shake our heads. Stand before the ball game begins, hands over hearts, brave at home. Pray for forgiveness, fall into bed, sleep the sleep of the dead. Thank you. Since my favorite poet is here, I'm going to read something that I had her in mind when I wrote it. This is from Namasi's Hand. It's called Your Name in the Lake. I wrote your name in the lake, then my name, our son's name, our daughter's name, then the universe's name, then God's name in the lake. I swam in our names. Dove below and felt how cool our names were, how fresh when our surface cracked. I wrote your name on the brow of your budded green profusion, the leaf you became, stout, proud, frim. How you trembled. The season you had was grand, then gilded, crinkled, beldame. You dropped weary winds, blown, undisclosed, unknown. I breathe your name over snail, slug, toad, and turtle, their days spent from spore to tadpole to crickscum, the abundance of life in your name, in every writhing arroyo of your body. Thank you. Well, this next one, we got Judy and I, you know, go to this Bear River Conference every year. It's a wonderful.
I just need to move this a little bit. There we go.
It's a wonderful conference, and we get to work with some terrific poets. And we got to work with Michael Dickman, who's an incredible poet and published in The New Yorker and other places. And he got us into writing series poems. And these are not, a lot of people don't like to publish them, but I did get this published. But this is a series poem. It comes, it's called Things That Come in Waves. And each of the headings is from a book by Jerry Dennis, who's a wonderful nature writer, if you ever get a chance. The book is called The Windward Shore. Things That Come in Waves. Oh, and these are all, sonnets, yeah. One, X-rays, gamma rays, microwaves, MRIs. How deep must we go past skin, past bone, past muscle. Descartes thought the soul resided in the pineal gland. A pea-shaped bleb of light cleaves to something anterior or caudal or posterior. Eventually, we are all read out by someone in a white jacket we don't know, a stranger who, between a sip of diet soda and a bite of peanut butter bread, counts the peaks and troughs, calculates the dead. Two, the gravitational harmonies of deep space. We were never a beginning, only the other side of a collapsed star, black hole excretia, random whim of an indifferent singularity. The Big Bang, the next feature after a celestial intermission between a gazillion cosmic films, an astrocinematic ructus with no beginning, no final act. Only we end. Eventually, not even a mote bowered in some defunct god's eye. Our sun, his world, my wife's hand, my myopic everland. Three, sound. That finds itself, then gets lost, finds itself, becomes confused, drops into splendid solitude, Goldberg variation number 25, deliquescent embryo come alive, but barely so. The question, will it survive, lingers throughout. Glenn Gould's hum carries Bach's song to its refulgent end. We strive to grasp its meaning. It eludes us now, then, and again. Four, weather fronts. It can get so cold that your soul turns to frost like rime around a cocktail glass. So hot that your heart bakes your writhing lover's back. So rainy that redded streets flow like the River Lethe. Your essence, a flood of melancholy. And the wind turns your wheat field pages like ancient sacred screeds caressed by cowl sleeves. Are you listening, Heraclitus? Change was all you left us. Thanks. Well, this is my last one, and some of you may know I was a life and business coach towards the end of my career as a shrink, and I took a marketing course, and I thought I'd hate it, and I loved it, and I love marketing my work. And, but some of you may know, yes, I know, that's a shock, Joan. And some of you may know that there are snobs, poetry snobs out there who think that it's below us, it's somehow just awful to do such things, prostitution in some ways, and I have no sympathy for those people. They're the same ones who complain that no one reads, you know, poetry, and it's really hard to read it if you don't know where to get it or where it is or if it's there. So anyway, this is for them. This is called The Poetry Book Parade, with thanks to Billy Collins for his poem, The Lanyard. Here come the books. The town crier heralds the poetry book parade, tossing rose petals on which the tomes may march. The books wave little arms, legs prance, while Disney mouths wide open. Here I am, trumpet the sonnets, by me. There was an old man in a tree, shouts a volume of limericks, by me. I am deep, dour, and dank, says a book with a black cover. I'm not for sale, unless you have money and are alive, by me. I've been telling a joke for 40 years, yells the crimson-colored cover. Only the editor of the New Yorker gets it. His is a hearty laugh, by me. A mother drops the spoon with which she feeds her infant and rushes out of the house to buy passing sestinas. Her husband stops his car in the middle of the street. He'll be late for work. No matter. His favorite pantoums are marching by. He must have them. Children gladly use their lunch money to purchase villanelles. They fight over who gets the haiku. Pardon me for exposing the near psychotic fantasies of poets who condemn those of us who market our work self-styled superior beings who decry self-promotion while whining that no one reads poetry anymore, who don't understand that there are only two kinds of poets these days, obscure unknown poets and known unknown poets. I wish to dwell among the latter. A colleague wrote, "You embarrass yourself letting us know every time you get published in some little magazine. Take me off your email list." "I'm sorry you feel that way," I replied, and I was sorry for him, someone who thought a bird should fly but not sing, a guy who has written a few wonderful poems known to only a handful of us because of his adversity to publicity. Still, he wears his obscurity proudly round his neck like a lanyard made in summer camp, but unlike Billy Collins, not given to his mother who nursed Billy through disease and gave him language, but reserved solely for himself, an insignificance fettered so tightly it will choke him to death, though no one will know or care. Thank you.